doctors. They didn't know what they're doing. I said, what happened, Fritz? He said, I went to the Shrine Auditorium. They announced that L. Ron Hubbard would be there, and on the program was going to be the first clear in history. Well, if people don't know what a clear is, then if you read Genetics and really know it, you become a clear. You clear your mind of all of his problems and psychological barriers, and you are a clear. So he said they had this girl on the stage. She was introduced as the first clear in history because of L. Ron Hubbard, and the audience goes wild, applauding. And then someone in the audience stands up and said, Miss, you're a clear, are you? Yeah. And that means that you have read Dianetics, yeah? And that means if you're a clear, you have the most perfect memory in history. Right. Well, can you quote the first paragraph of Dianetics? And she couldn't do it. The damn fools should have had a shield in the audience to prepare, huh? And here Fritz was in my house tearing his hair out, saying, if I'd prepared the evening, it would have been brighter than those stupid bastards. So Dianetics almost was destroyed that night because they didn't prepare. But it went on and became Scientology, and now it's all over the world.
You've received an awful lot of honors over the years, Mr. Bradbury. There's an asteroid that's named after you out orbiting somewhere near the orbit of Mars. You've been honored by the President of the United States. What has been the most gratifying for you over the years in terms of recognition?
No, just going into a library and seeing my books on the shelf near Edgar Rice Burroughs and H.G. Wells and Jules Verne. That is the moment for me. Wonderful. Just wonderful. I've led a fantastic life. I've never had an unhappy day in my life. In the last 70 years, I've never had one day of depression or melancholy. You know why? Because every day I do something that I love. I've had bad days when my friends die, when my relatives die. That's different. Something else. You can't do anything about that. But every day that I'm all by myself, I'm happy. Because I'm doing what I should be doing. If everyone in the world could do that, it would be a great world.
Ray Bradbury, we thank you very much for speaking with us. This has been most interesting for us. We hope that we'll be able to chat again sometime.
I hope so. And in the meantime, next time you see Norman Corwin, tell him I still love him.
I'm Douglas Everett. You've been listening to Radio Parallax. We'll see you next week at the same time.
You are listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Doctor's Inn.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart. Not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple.
Hello, this is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I'm a family practice doctor here in Chico, and once a month, the Doctor's Inn, the third Thursday of the month from 6 to 7, I come on and we discuss issues that are medical or health-related. And I like to have input from you, the public. If you have a subject that you would like to have me cover on this show, you could email me at klogan.md@yahoo.com. Do remember that the voices, the opinions actually voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. And speaking of underwriters, the Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn more about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by the Chico News and Review, providing Northern California with news, commentary, and entertainment. The Chico News and Review is available for free every Thursday at over 600 locations throughout Butte, Glynn, and Tehama counties. They can also be found online at newsreview.com. Today's show is about, essentially, I was thinking about how to introduce this subject, and I'm going to say this show is going to be about availability of health care. I'm going to say that. But specifically about medical anthropology, a subject that even the title of that is makes me ask, what the heck is medical anthropology? Tell me about it. And so, fortunately, we have a guest today who's going to tell us about it. He knows this subject. And this guest is Ivan Senek. Did I say your name correctly, Ivan?
Yes, you did.
Thank you for being here.
My pleasure.
So again, medical anthropology. The terminology is new to me. But hey, so before you get into that, I think I want the listeners to know who you are. So, Ivan Senek, who the heck are you?
Well, I'm a 23-year-old student at California State University, Chico.
Okay.
I officially graduated last May with a Bachelor's of Arts in Anthropology.
Okay.
From Chico.
So you have a degree in anthropology currently?
I do have a degree. I'm currently applying to graduate programs here in the state and out of it. What else can I say? I've studied anthropology for about 6 years at a junior college, Santa Rosa Junior College, in Sonoma County.
Dad went there.
Really?
He did.
Wow. So I graduated there with an Associates of Arts of Anthropology and Folklore. And then I moved up here to Chico, where part of my family lives. My dad, my brother, my grandparents also live here. So it's almost like a hometown for me.
Gotcha. So you got some connections here, and you go to Chico State. Gotcha. And you got your degree from Chico State, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Excellent. So, thank you for that introduction.
My pleasure.
And Ivan and I met briefly a couple of weeks ago, and he started telling me about the medical anthropology subject, and I just had to see if he would be on the show. So, again, thank you for being here. So, if you don't mind, tell us, what does medical anthropology, if it's somebody like me who doesn't know what it is, what is it?
Medical anthropology is a subfield. It's a very small category of anthropology. Anthropology being the study of people. Anything and everything a person does is anthropology. We study that. We learn about it. There's four fields of anthropology. There's cultural, which deals with cultures both here in America and around the world.
So cultural anthropology is one subset.
One subset.
Okay.
And medical anthropology fits into cultural because medicine and ideas of the body are greatly influenced by culture. Medical anthropology is the study of the question, what is the body? What is the body to this culture? What is the body to this individual? What is the body to this society? And continuing on to that, what is suffering of the body? What are ailments? What is illness and disease of this body perceived, or what do they see these things as? Here in America, we have biomedical, which you're vastly experienced with, and we think of illnesses and disease. You get a cough, you go to the doctor, and you take antibiotics or whatever. But you also have homeopathic and home medicine, like where you have a sore throat, you drink warm lemonade, and that'll help it right out. That's another idea towards what the body is and what is suffering. And anything and everything in those is medical anthropology.
And then when you speak about medical anthropology and cultural anthropology as the bigger section, you were talking about America, but then you can look at many of the other cultures across the world and many other cultures here in the United States, I take it, as part of that study.
Absolutely. Most anthropologists that I know and that I've read about tend to pick an area that they want to specialize in, that they're interested in. It could be American medicine. It could be the Great Basin of Nevada or California or Mexico, South America. Anywhere you can imagine, anywhere people are, there are anthropologists specializing in that region who know the ways people live and express themselves.
And that's part of cultural anthropology.
Yes.
Hey, before we go further into cultural anthropology and the subset of medical anthropology, what are the other subset or sections of anthropology? So we got cultural anthropology.
Yes. There's linguistics. Linguistic anthropology, which is the study of language. Mm. It's not necessarily learning a language, but it's learning the rules that govern a language. Like, how do you form a sentence? What is a correct sentence? What is a correct word? And how language has changed over time. And that kind of flows in with cultural anthropology and essentially the study of humans, because we have to communicate.
So kind of related. Okay, so we got linguistics, we got cultural. What other anthropology are we?
There's physical anthropology, which is the study of the human body and the evolution of the human body over time. So anything that has to deal with bone structure, stature, sex, ancestry is all physical anthropology. How humans have changed in the last, as long as we've been around, how have we changed? Where have we come from? And then there's archaeology, which is the final subset of the grand term anthropology, which deals with the archaeological record, which is essentially anything you dig up. You go out, you find a Indian village that was buried in prehistoric times. That's archaeology. You go and you uncover a railroad tie factory somewhere. That's historical archaeology. So anything humans have left behind is essentially archaeology.
I think when I've heard the word anthropology as I've grown up, I think most of it has been about that archaeology type of anthropology, like people who dig through ruins and find evidence from past civilization, etc. Interesting. So cultural anthropology, and subset medical anthropology. All right, so you have a degree in anthropology and you've been studying and you're looking to branch out into medical anthropology, is that correct?
Yes.
So what have you done so far? Tell us what's in your brain.
Well, a lot of things, Ken, but predominantly I've traveled to Puerto Rico to study their healthcare going on over there, especially in the debt crisis that they're going through that is just mixed in with a lot of our government and the troubles we're going on here, because they are a United States territory. A lot of public services given by the government over there are failing. They're not there for the people. And I was just wondering what was going on, especially everything with Zika, how scary that was.
Zika virus that was going through, yeah.
Yeah, so I went there for about three and a half weeks, lived there. Mm. My brother came with me, actually, my younger brother. And we walked around the marketplaces just talking to people, saying, what do you think? When you get sick, where do you go? And through that and talking to a lot of the market vendors or a lot of the students there, because we lived not too far from a university, we kind of just talked to them, and they said, hey, because there's this economic crisis going on over here, we have to get more jobs. We have to do more, like, cash in hand, not taxing, like, under the table mm-hmm. kind of income, and then go to private healthcare. Like, we walked down the street, and my brother and I noticed that there are four private medical doctors on one block. There's two laboratories and three dentists and a gynecology office there. And that was just one block. You walk two more blocks and you'll see the exact same thing. So private, more private care is more available. And then public services has obviously been crumbling because of the economic crisis. They've had to funnel resources into other things. Currently, I'm working on writing an article about transnational individuals, refugees, migrants in Morocco. I took a trip there in December and January to discover what these people think of their actions, what the reality for these people are. It's not, Morocco is often a forgotten front of migration between Africa and Europe and to the rest of the world. So I went there with an esteemed colleague, Alex Rael, who's a graduate student at Chico State. Me and him did collaborative work. We worked together. And that was about a month, month and a half, just going, talking to people, hanging out, getting their opinions, and seeing what is really happening instead of just flipping through news channels.
So when in Puerto Rico and in Morocco, when you're seeing the people and you're talking to them about how they get their how they obtain health care when they need health care, where do they go and how do they pay for it, and who's available, what is available health care system wise for them to participate in, huh? And can we bop back to Puerto Rico for a minute? As you said, economically they're doing quite poorly. So the people you were talking to, how do they afford to get health care? And how do those doctors and laboratories able to stay in business and all that? And what's your feel on that? What's the vibe you got there?
What I got from there is, and talking to a lot of the locals over mm-hmm. there, is they work three jobs. A lot of the taxi drivers I talked to, a lot of the students over there, they said, hey, yeah, I'm a taxi Monday through Thursday, and then I'm giving guides with this tour guide company, or I'm working for the college, or I just picked up this job working at the local market as a vendor selling things. And they just, every time I talk to somebody, they listed off three jobs, and they said, this is the way it has to be.
They had to do that to survive.
They had to do that to survive, to pay rent, to buy food, and then when they get sick, if they get sick, mm-hmm. they've saved up a little money or have what money from working, and they take it to the doctors, and they just pay right in cash right there.
Oh, I see. Wow, that's... Well, and then how about in Morocco? What kind of situation do those people find themselves in relative to seeking out medical care? Is it... Do they have a universal health care system there, or are they...
They have something similar to universal health care for everyone, for anybody who's a Moroccan citizen or given residency, being able to live in Morocco. Mm-hmm. They are given, you can go to the hospital, you can go to a doctor, and it's covered. Morocco is developing. They're building new buildings. They're building new factories. Their economic, their money is doing quite well. It's getting better because of this development. And so they're able to give their citizens free health care. Now, whether or not there's more complex things, I can't say because I haven't been able to spend as mm-hmm. much time researching. Mm-hmm. I'm still working on it.
Mm-hmm.
But from the individuals who I saw and the individuals when I was over there who got hurt, they went straight into the hospital, did not have to pay a thing. One individual I spoke to hurt his hand in between one night after I saw him. I saw mm-hmm. him the next day. And he went straight to the hospital and got it bandaged up and was sent on his way for free. Mm-hmm. It didn't cost him anything.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that does get them is that medicine does cost.
Mm-hmm.
It costs a few things. It costs quite a bit of money to actually pay for medications that have either been imported or were produced in Morocco. And that's kind of where their problems are. So even for the migrants and the refugees over there, from what I've seen from the experiences and conversations I've seen in Morocco, they're given aid and help just right there at the hospital or at the doctor's office. But for a regular doctor's checkup or medication, they do have to pay. So
oh, I see. So, so medication. So it's not a perfect system anywhere. So those people can get immediate care at a hospital without having to pay, but additional care and more preventative care probably would be something that they don't necessarily have available to them. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. But there are a lot of preventative measures. Like when I was over there, sanitation was a huge thing. There were guys walking up and down the street at every hour of the night, picking up garbage, sweeping the streets, cleaning up. And the individuals I talked to and generally just hung out with, my what we call informants, or mm-hmm. I refer to a few of them as my friends because I spent
sure.
so much time with them.
Sure.
They would wash their hands constantly. They would wash their hands two or three times in a couple hours. They don't use hand sanitizer, but they just go wash their hands
sure.
in water and soap. They boil their water properly, obviously, and they're very sanitary over
there. So trying to stay healthy from that kind of contagious disease standpoint, huh? And then have you been to any other countries or studied any other countries?
I haven't studied, but I was in Australia when I was younger. I was over there playing a soccer tournament back in 2004. I went and played soccer against some of the local boys over there. That was pretty fun.
Uh-huh. You were not looking into healthcare anthropology or medical anthropology at that time, I take it?
Not at that time, but...
Unless you sprained your ankle during a game.
No. Look, I came through unscathed, so...
I think they have universal health care of a sort over there. I don't know the details.
They do. And America, and that's one thing I've learned in my studies of medical systems in the industrialized or post-industrialized world, is America is completely unique. We've taken parts from almost every medical system in the world. You can look at France, you can look at Britain, you can look at Australia or Japan or Norway, and you can see parts of the American medical system that we've taken theirs and incorporated in. If you think of universal healthcare, well, in a way we kind of have it with the VA and care for the elderly here is universal. They get the care, although it's not perfect. No system ever is perfect, but we can keep striving to make it better. And that, in my opinion, as a medical anthropologist, is probably one of the greatest things about this country and about our medical system, is that we have so much room for improvement, and yet we're already so far ahead. We're offering health care, and hopefully it gets better.
Yeah.
For everyone.
Yeah. And then, have you been to South America? Have you studied any of the countries of South America? Or
I've studied them here in the library. I know their history, and I keep up on their current events. That's an area I'm wanting to focus my graduate studies in.
Oh, that's what you were telling me.
Especially
yeah.
Peru, Colombia, Venezuela, Ecuador, places like that, because they're influenced by us. And often we as Americans kind of forget, we think we're the only country out here in the Western Hemisphere, but we have Canada just north of us, and we have Mexico south of us, and then we have a whole other continent, South America, right there. And those are our sister countries.
Yeah. You know, I as you were talking about healthcare in Puerto Rico and Morocco and other places and the availability thereof, partly the availability because of cost, it strikes me that the subject of healthcare availability in this country, and included in that is our healthcare system that's going to be going through some more changes probably soon because of the Trump presidency and the Affordable Care Act changes that are going to happen. And they've just the fact that the changes that came with the Affordable Care Act, of course, affect many of us. You know, that's really medical anthropology we're talking about. And we're talking about the United States example of medical anthropology. Wow.
Yeah.
It's a subject of interest to me. Let's say medical anthropology in the United States is a subject of interest to me because of the problems with availability. I'm like what you said. We have, I'm going to rephrase what you said. We have much to offer. We have much medical expertise available, at least present, let's say not available, but present in the United States, especially when we compare it to other countries in the world. But the availability, how can the cultural or medical anthropology aspect of it, in other words, how available is it to all of us? In the United States, that's the problem, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, from what I see in my medical work. And so that's interesting to hear how it is in the two countries you talked about. And then you're going to be looking into South America some, too. You know, have you looked at Cuba at all?
I've looked at Cuba a little bit, and in all honesty, Cuba impresses me in many ways. Cuba, the sustainability that went on in Havana, they produce almost 80% of their own fruits and vegetables, their own produce in Havana, in urban farm. Growing areas, term escapes me for the second, but and also their universal healthcare and their universal education. Mm-hmm. It came at a great cost, but it's there for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a goal to strive for. For any society is just to. And we sometimes forget about it here in America, or not just America, but the industrialized world, is we take our sick, we take our elderly that we have to care for. I personally help care for my grandparents and have dealt with their declining health. We take them and we put them out of our view. We put them out of our daily lives. Yeah. We put them in an elderly home, or we put the sick in hospitals in quarantine and keep them away from us. They're sick, whole mentality. And that kind of damages us in a way, is we're not there to care for the people who cared for us when we were younger. We're not recognizing sickness or illness in people and try to help them. Instead, we're just kind of shoving them aside, which leads also into the whole psychology and psychiatry issues going on here in America. With here, you're feeling depressed. Here, take a pill, and you'll act better. And that whole mentality. So universal health care is something every society, every culture has struggled with in the scope of human history, because every society, every culture has to deal with illness, has to deal with and has dealt with illness and disease and age and disabilities. Everybody's dealt with this. It's a human experience. But the way forward, the way to address it is, well, we have to help each other. We're humans. We're here.
The cultural ramifications of that subject you're just talking about, how do we care for one another? How do we care for our fellow citizens, and including family, as you said, our elderly in our own family, for instance, or ill in our own family? Culturally, how do we handle that? Wow. And you know, I think it's useful information to know, to look at how other cultures throughout the world deal with their healthcare and help with issues such as the elderly and illness in the family, etc. Great subject. Let's take a little music break, and then we'll jump back into some more of this, and maybe delve into other subjects. Who knows?
This is Dr. Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I'm glad you're listening, you listeners. We are talking with our guest today is Ivan Senek. He has his degree in anthropology, and he's studying currently medical anthropology. And he's been informing us about what that subject is and what it looks like, including around different parts of the world. The one piece I wanted to say is, it seems to me that medical anthropology and that piece of cultural anthropology is something that we here in the United States could benefit so much from learning the cultural way or the situation or the way other cultures deal with healthcare in general and in specifics. We in this, like you said earlier, we in this country have a great healthcare technological system. We have a lot of up-to-date technology and knowledge and doctors and nurses and laboratories and testing availability in this country, especially when we look at other countries of the world. However, how we have culturally placed that, or how we culturally utilize that in this country, in my view, is the big snafu. It's the big roadblock. Specifically, the lack of availability equally of all of that healthcare wealth or knowledge and utilization is not available to all citizens of the United States. And that's a cultural thing. And as a matter of fact, even instituting something such as a single payer healthcare system in this country where we all would equally have access to healthcare equally, the roadblock in obtaining that here in this country, single payer healthcare in this country, is certainly a cultural thing. This roadblock, it's a United States of America cultural roadblock. And wow, I never even thought of how that fact fit into the picture of cultural anthropology, and specifically the medical anthropology subset area of cultural anthropology. Wow. So again, I commend people like you who look at the culture, other cultures, and how they implement their healthcare availability, et cetera, and the problems with it and the benefits of it. And like you said earlier, taking what works, learning from other cultures how we can better improve our healthcare availability in this country would be such a great thing. Again, we have the technology and all that, but the utilization of all that, we could learn so much from other cultures, like you were saying, and including in that Cuba, I just happened to think. And I'm not going to Cuba soon. I'd like to go to Cuba someday. Somebody geographically near me here at KZFR may go to Cuba someday, and if he does, I want to hear more about it. His name's not Ray Lager. I didn't say that, but anyway, hey, Ivan, what more can you tell us? Give us more feel of this subject of medical anthropology.
Well, medical anthropology is it's almost brand new. Academically speaking, it really came about 35, 40 years ago with two individuals coming together. Their names Margaret Locke and Nancy Shepherd Hughes came together and wrote several articles that almost started the discipline. And it has somewhat blossomed from there. It's such a wide topic, like you and I were talking about before, but it involves not only looking at a culture and how vast that is, but it's also looking at the history, how people perceive, how people see things, how people understand things, and then how is that different from ourselves, or how is that similar? And sometimes we don't even compare that to ourselves. We look at their and religion studies is almost paralleled to medical anthropology, because religion affects view of the body. If we look back in the industrialized world, I'm speaking of Western Europe, America, Canada, industrialized places. If you look back in our history, our idea of the body stemmed from Greek and Roman, this Latin idea of the body. This is our body, and this is the different forms, the different shapes it takes, and the very logical, almost methodical, like piece by piece, one way. And that has developed over time to be, this is your body, this is what germ theory is, what germs are, tiny microscopic living things that each perform a very complex task for everyone. And then we move forward to today, where the perfect human body that is shown to our children, shown to us, shown to our parents and grandparents, is this, like, you need to have this perfect body of that, that corporate media, industrialized media kind of pushes on us, like, this is the perfect body, the youthful body is the body you really want, that you should really have. Is that necessarily healthy? It's debatable. Is it, and that stems from our almost immediate, like, we need to have this instant, this ready body, this perfect body, this imaginary, almost impossible to reach body. And that's, well, a few sentences about what American Western ideas of the body are. And I could talk for hours about that. I could talk for any medical anthropologist, those above me and those studying for their bachelor's, can always read the plethora and large amount of books in any library of medical anthropology. But it comes down to the simple fact of what is the body. And there isn't just one body. You, as a medical doctor, Dr. Logan, you look at my body and you see the organs, you see my bones, the tissues that make up, the cells that make up my body. If you look at traditional Chinese medicine with qi is a form of energy. And the way that it flows through the body and connects the body to the surrounding world. And illness is interpreted as a disruption of this flow of energy. In lowland Amazonia, maturity in the group, in the society, and in the culture is determined by the knowledge a person has, that by the experience they have. So if a young person like myself is vastly experienced with knowledge, in that society, they are more mature than other individuals. And these are just a few, very few amounts of the almost limitless cultural conceptions of the body. And each have their own origins in the religion, in the society, and the way the society has developed. And just another example for American biomedicine is we think of ourselves as machines. We think of that the mind and the body are separate. You say, you drink a cup of coffee or one of those energy drinks, and you say, I'm wired. Are you really wired like a computer with circuits and things like that? When some people say they're tired, like, oh, I need to shut down. Does that literally mean you stop, you die, we turn you off? We think of ourselves as machines in some ways. And that started back in the 50s and 60s, once this huge turn towards technology and the amount of technology in our lives.
And other and other cultures certainly would not share those ways with us, would they?
Oh, absolutely not, because their world, their essentially their life isn't influenced by the things we are. They're not around the same things we are.
Yeah, you know what it makes me think of when you said that, in thinking back about you were mentioning earlier the elderly and how we handle and deal with the elderly in our society, and now it makes me think of what you just said, you know, how the push is for the perfect body, the young, the fully beautiful and functional mechanicalness of the body in our culture. And then what about as you age? Well, that leaves them out. You know, that it's almost like a disrespect to our development as we age. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a heavy thought. Wow. And then how other cultures that do not share that same perfect bodiness, admiration in their culture, mm-hmm. may respect, such as you alluded to, experience as a cultural greatness of that, and with that experience and knowledge is part of aging. And the respect for that culturally, which in some other cultures is much more vibrant than in ours, for the respect to the elderly and the respect for their knowledge and experience, etc. Mm-hmm. Wow, interesting. Huh. I can see that in some of the... I suspect in maybe Puerto Rico and Morocco you saw some of that. Respect more for the elderly and with respect to their what they can teach us, and the beautifulness of the agingness, not the, as opposed to looking at it as the negative badness of the agingness, but the beauty of it. Wow. Did you experience any of that differently in, let's say, Morocco than in the United States?
Absolutely. In Morocco, a lot of the people, myself and my colleague, spoke to, and when we told them about our lives and I brought up the elderly, or they told me their concerns about their ailing parents, or we had to stop a few informal interviews and somebody said, hey, I gotta go take care of, mm-hmm. I have to go take care of my grandmother now, or I have to go take care of a member mm-hmm. of my family. Mm-hmm. And it was completely different. It was the family cares for the elderly in the family. It's, they're at home. They're not in an elderly home. And that was the topic of a few conversations I had, is they're at home, we take care of them. How do you do that? How can you come over here to another country and not be home taking care of your family? And we had to explain to it, that's unfortunately not the way things are here in America.
Mm-hmm.
So it is immensely different, because even elder respect, someone who's older than you, especially in Africa, is if someone's older than you, even by a few months, you have to show them respect, because they're here on this earth before you. They have more experience, more time. And I definitely started emulating that, and so did my colleague. We started acting that way too, is, this is, you're older than me, I'm going to show you respect, I will show you pleasantries, and just be nice, and be humble, and be respectful to you, and listen to your advice as you give it. Of course, that was our purpose, to go over there to learn,
mm-hmm.
to immerse ourselves, to essentially just dive in the deep end, and see how these people live, and experience life, but it started to feel, it felt good to even do that.
It grew on you.
It did.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a, the more I'm, the more we're discussing it, the more I I'm realizing that we're missing out on that part of our experience here with our fellow human beings and our loved ones and our relatives, etc. And me as a doctor, what it made me think of when we were talking about this is, I do family practice, so I see people essentially of all ages. That includes elderly and people that are middle-aged and getting towards elderly. And I'm just going to use the word the beauty of it, the beauty of aging, and the not badness of aging.
Mm-hmm.
The respect of aging is something that I too need to learn to take part of. I need to be more respectful in my brain when I'm seeing people of different ages, elderly, etc. Wow. There we go again, explaining that the cultural anthropology and the medical anthropology study of different cultures and how that can be so beneficial to our growing of ourselves and in our lives and interactions with others here in the United States too. Wow. So have you how is your do you have any experiences with personal experiences in medical anthropology oidness in your life, such as availability of health care for your needs, etc.?
Yes, I've been around the medical. I've actually been around the medical field almost my whole life. Both of my grandmothers are retired nurses.
Oh, wow.
One passed away a few years ago. My mom is a nurse in San Francisco area.
Oh,
she's
wow.
a family nurse practitioner. So
wow.
I grew up running around hospitals and doctor's offices. So being around the medical field is, it's almost like home to me in a way. Speaking of health, as you know, Dr. Logan, I'm type 1 diabetic since I was 11. So I've had it for about 12 years now. It'll be 13 in August. And that is a disease that's going to stick with me for the rest of my life.
Wow.
And so the medical field and my experience in it here in America has been quite unique. I've been stuck with more needles than I could probably count in a lifetime. I check my blood sugar 3 to 4 times a day. It should be 5. I do apologize. My doctor's here in the studio with me, so I have to apologize for that. But I take insulin. I am dependent on a liquid that is produced by a pharmaceutical company, and the cost of that liquid is something I couldn't purchase on my own.
Mm-hmm. It's very expensive.
It is. It's about $270-$300 a bottle of insulin in today's market.
Which is disgusting.
It is.
And inappropriate.
It
costs that much.
Because that's essentially the value of a month to me. That's a month of life for me.
Mm-hmm.
A normal human body creates insulin within itself, and I drew the lucky card of being type 1 diabetic when I was 11,
Your pancreas doesn't make the insulin. You have to buy it and inject insulin every day, or you don't live on this planet.
Yeah, so medical anthropology is...
Yeah.
It's not only my career. It's not only my way of looking at the world. It's part of me.
You've lived it. You've lived it experientially in the United States, the culture of the United States, since your youth. You've grown up with it. Well, I just think the field of medical anthropology for you, you know, with your degree in anthropology and then moving forward, further studies in medical anthropology is going to be a great... Yeah, I just see great stuff in your future, young man.
Thank you. Thank you.
So, thank you very much for being on the show, Ivan Sinek. I would love to have you back on the show in future and update us on your studies of medical anthropology.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And maybe talk about diabetes camp sometime in the future, too. Well, thanks again, Ivan.
My pleasure.
Anytime. And thanks, Ray Lager, for being the engineer on this show. The Doctor's Inn, which is from 6 to 7 in the evening, the third Thursday of every month. The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, producers of fine beers and ales. Sierra Nevada also offer fine dining at their tap room and restaurant at 1075 East 20th Street in Chico. More information can be found at sierranevada.com. And by Blaze and Jay's, Chico's oldest smoke shop since 1998, featuring Blaze One clothing, Blaze One glass repairs, vaporizers, e-liquid, and detox products. Blaze and Jay's has got you covered. Blaze and Jay's has three locations: in Chico on the corner of 9th and Salem, Orville at 695 Orodam Boulevard, East and in Paradise at 6226 the Skyway. The opinions voiced on this show don't necessarily represent the views and opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. It basically was the views and opinions of Ivan Sinek and Ken Logan. And thanks for listening, you guys. See you next month on The Doctor's Inn. Stay tuned now for Beatle Nation.
To be filled,
I don't need no doctor. I don't need no doctor.
I don't need no doctor, Lord, or prescriptions to be filled.
I don't need no doctor.
I don't
need no doctor.
All in my baby's arms, I could take away these chills.
Happened once before, when I came to you. your door, no reply. They said it wasn't you, but I saw you peep through your window.